Before we get into the news, I wanted to let people know we are coming to the end of our December fundraiser, and I think, I don't want to jinx it, but I think we can say it's looking like this may be our most successful fundraiser in a long time. We'll put it that way. We set a very ambitious goal of trying to raise $17,000. And we are not done trying. We are going to be later this morning. We will be out at the Christmas Eve Farmers Market. And then we're going to make one big splash at the end. We're going to do a radiothon, a good old-fashioned radiothon for the final weekend. So that will be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday coming up. Want to just thank everybody who has helped us out. It has been really gratifying not only to gain some financial stability really for the first time in a long time, but also to hear from people and to, you know, make that connection that we're always trying to reach out and but this has been like I said, very rewarding and very satisfying. And so we're not ready to announce anything yet, and we're going to keep running through the wire, but I want to thank everybody who has helped us out.
Yeah, and some of the events that we've been involved in connection with that have involved, as you say, hearing from people. Yeah. And it's also reminded me of what we've accomplished.
Yeah.
In that, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
that's fair.
I was one of the few that was working on this 10 years ago,
right.
More than 10 years ago.
Right.
And thinking, oh, wow, maybe we could get a community radio station and how it would be. And, you know, we didn't know if we would. We faced a lot of hurdles. We've had a lot of adventures, like dealing with the pandemic, including getting asked, and it was very rewarding to do this, to do the play-by-play. You and I did a couple of them for the six high schools graduations during pandemic, when the first graduation during pandemic, they had cars.
We did, and we also came in and did weekly updates, weekly reports to try to let people know what was going on, and because that was obviously something that was changing by the day. And so,
I may be preaching to the choir because anybody hearing me is listening to this show, but I will reiterate that what we hope to do and are somewhat succeeding in doing, we could do it better if we had more resources, but we are a community voice helping Las Cruces talk to itself in every way, whether it's politically or culturally or musically, in every way. And that's only begun, and that's important because most of what we get is national news, which is the aspect of news that we are least able to affect.
Right.
And we do try to do local news, local conversation, local events. And you are sure invited to propose a show or propose guests on existing shows, criticize us on our website. Yeah, we want you to donate money, but we also want to hear your views.
Yeah.
Positive or negative, and involve more of you in the show
or
in the shows.
And we're always looking for volunteers. We're always looking for new shows. And we're trying to grow. And
some of us will be at the farmer's market for a couple hours later this morning.
And we will have vinyl. I have found out that the CDs aren't going anymore. It's the vinyl. That's what people are looking for.
Yes.
So we will have a selection of Christmas music out there. If you are like me and you tend to do your holiday shopping, if you tend to start your holiday shopping on Christmas Eve, we will have, and you have music lovers that you're shopping for, you know, we will, that's what we're pitching.
We'll be there.
Yeah, we'll be there. So I don't know if you saw the story, and I don't know, it's not really an official thing like they used to do the top 10 stories of the year. But the Sun News' Jessica Osunias put out what she thought were five stories that captured our attention, is how she put it.
Local or national?
Local.
Okay.
And I should start by saying that it does not include Project Jupiter. So, you know, I don't know how you could have any top stories of the year list.
Who paid you off?
Yeah. Well,
No, I'm kidding, of course.
So anyway, here's what she had. And number
we
one.
We should note that we're talking about the Sun News. Yeah. People may not recognize Jessica.
I did. Jessica Osunias. That's right. Number one, she had the Young Park shooting, and I don't have any quarrel with that. I, you know, Let's see. Number two, it was President Donald Trump's second term policies to impact New Mexico, which is basically what we're going to be devoting the whole show to today. Right. That's true, but I don't. It's not a local story. I don't know. Number three, this is two officers convicted for on-duty shootings, two additional civilian deaths.
That certainly qualifies.
It does. Number four, and I'd forgotten about this one, Judge Cano getting arrested in a case linked to a Venezuelan drug gang.
Yeah, I'm not sure. If we were sitting in a room with Jennifer, I'd say, what else you got? And maybe
that's kind of how I thought about that. It happened at a time when judges all around the country were getting arrested, and so I think that sort of made it more newsworthy, and it did get national attention, I think, because of that. But I kind of feel like what you do. And then the fifth one is gun violence leads lawmakers' list of priorities, fails in legislative session.
I would have added Jupiter to the list.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm trying to think of what the other big stories were this year. And there has to be good news in there somewhere, doesn't it? I mean, didn't something good happen somewhere this year?
Well, you could count a former Aggie quarterback.
Diego Pavia.
Second in the Heisman voting.
Yeah, that's right. But that's right.
I'm not sure everybody cares about football. I'm not sure if that qualifies as a local story anymore since he abandoned us.
Yeah, I think both of those things are true. In terms of, I would maybe put the No Kings rally in there.
I'd put that ahead of whatever was number five there.
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't have included the Trump. I'm not sure what I would have had instead. But I get it.
Qualifies as local and it has a significant local impact.
Right, right. The other local thing I wanted to talk about before we get on to the more national stuff that I did think was significant was the Community of Hope extending its lease with the city. And it just gives us an opportunity to kind of look back at where we were in 1994 when this all started. And it was a very small group of people who were just looking for a little safety. They're just looking for a place where they could communally pitch a tent and have a little bit of control and a little bit of, like I said, safety. Yeah. That's really. And so at the very beginning, they were doing their own patrols or whatever you want to call it. And
they had their own sort of democracy.
They did. They set up their own government, their own structure. They went to the city, and I think it's fair to say that the city was, had some valid concerns that anybody would have had in that situation. And legally, there were some questions about can they do this? And I think, if I remember right, the city had to change a few of its ordinances in order to allow it to happen. And so that's where we were in 1994, and now you look at where we're at today, where they have not only expanded the area, but now they're in the process of building the Amador Crossing apartments are under construction. They will be included in the Community of Hope. And it is a success, an amazing success, but a qualified success because we are still treating homelessness, and we are providing an element of safety and dignity that doesn't exist in other communities. I think that's fair to say, but that doesn't solve the problem.
It doesn't. On the other hand, I think they're doing an awful lot more than
said. Yeah, they're doing job placement and housing stuff.
And I mean, my thought is that the people, and I hope somebody will call us, but some of the people who complain loudest about the existence of the Community of Hope are the ones that should be praising it most because it is saving them from more problems they might have. And, of course, I reject the whole homelessness equates to crime,
right,
sort of thing.
Right.
But, yeah, if you are out on the street, you're going to find you're going to try to find a nice place to sleep at night. It might be in somebody's backyard, which will scare the hell out of that person and be illegal.
Right.
But understandable. You may relieve yourself on somebody's front lawn, which won't be popular. So just helping, just giving these people a place is a good start. It does not encourage homelessness. And in fact, it tries to get people off the streets. They have tents to rents program and other ways that they try to get people into housing. Some of these people are not capable of being in good housing and functioning very well, or just won't stay,
mm-hmm,
have mental or emotional issues, or mental and emotional issues and physical. Well, they help with that too. They try to help them with counseling. They try to help. If people don't think about, there was one Harvard guy that wrote in the Harvard Bulletin about him and his partner getting homeless. And it can happen to most anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does, you are just without everything that we take for granted. You can't go into your bathroom at home. Somebody is calling in, I think, or at least giving us a message. Now, anyway, they get people into they let people use computers who don't have them, who may want to get in touch with their families, which is a great thing to begin with, but also maybe they'll go home. They help people get in touch with jobs, get in touch with services. People might be entitled to veterans benefits, but if you haven't got a computer or a car to drive to El Paso or whatever it may take to actually communicate meaningfully with,
right,
the Veterans Administration or whoever it is, you might as well not have those benefits. So they help in a variety of ways. Just to begin with, somebody caring and saying, okay, how can we help? What do you need? How can we help you? Is it clothing? Is it looking better for a job interview?
Yeah, it's a wraparound services. They really do. They have experts who understand the needs, who understand the community, who understand the employment situation, the housing situation, and all of it.
And the people who criticize it and say, oh, well, it's so nice, it brings homeless from elsewhere. Number one, that's not true. Our weather does that. Beyond that, it's saving you from the worst consequences of having people be homeless. And people are homeless because of our economic situation.
That's right.
And not only are increasing inequality gap that's horrible and unforgivable, but just the fact of capitalism.
And one injury, one illness, one medical,
right,
and there you go. There's your life savings is shot. And, so yes, if you're not able to empathize and you're not able to, understand that.
Then you should run for president.
Then you should run for president. What the interruption was, I was supposed to let people know that if they go to our booth this morning at the Christmas Eve market, the farmer's market downtown, wear your ugly Christmas sweater. We are having an ugly Christmas sweater contest at the KTAL booth. So once again,
I might win it without having intended to.
No, I think that there will be some truly ugly, ugly sweaters, and hopefully so.
Yeah, I get to judge? Because I'll be there from 10 to 12.
I don't know who gets to judge.
As soon as I can get there after this.
Yeah, me too. I'm not sure how that's going to work. But yeah, so drop on by.
At any rate, the fact that they've been in existence for what now, 21 years?
Yeah.
Did I do my math right?
You're gonna make me do that this early.
They do so much for not only their immediate clients, but the community.
Yeah, no, I agree. So What else locally before we, what do we got, another 12, 13 minutes here?
Well, Jupiter, of course, and I hope we can ask Mr. Soles for his views. He'll be here for an hour.
Yeah.
That's a pretty relevant
Because that really
topic.
Started in the legislature.
Right. The legislature passed something that a lot of them say they never really got a chance to see. Some of them certainly did. And the governor has pushed this. Two of her cabinet members have gone to work with the proponents, which is legal revolving door kind of thing, but not appetizing. Yes.
Okay, so that means something to you.
Oh, yes,
yeah, it means,
it does
yeah,
mean
yeah, it means something.
Something
to me, too.
Let me
yeah.
intro what we're about to
yeah,
hear,
yeah.
though I intro it in it. There's a wonderful and amazing citizen in this town who's reaching historic proportions, partly because he was born before the U.S. entered World War I, which is a very long time ago. So with no more, let me introduce something we created that runs about 4 minutes. Are we taking the caller first? I guess so. Hello?
Hi, this is Nancy. I'm just doing a call in. Nancy Baker.
Hey, Nancy.
Yes, you were going to chat with us a bit about the Illinois case.
Well, I first wanted to compliment your beautiful remarks about Community of Hope and Camp Hope. I was involved with it also in the early to mid-90s, and it really did start with a wing and a prayer, and it's just become a model of how to treat people who are unhoused in a dignified and effective way. And there's no, it's not like a hand up. It really is the classic hand up. And I just applaud you and on paying tribute to them this morning. So thanks for doing that. And I also have one little brief comment. We do have a gift to democracy from the Supreme Court. It's not a big gift, but it's finally something from the Supreme Court. Reigning in the power of this administration, these grandiose claims of executive power. And that is Trump versus Illinois, the decision that was announced by the justices yesterday that denied the government's desire to go ahead with troop deployment in Chicago and override the temporary restraining order that a federal judge had put on the federal government. So I just think that was a decision that supports democracy. And it may be a case where, I mean, this is just a temporary. They haven't gotten to the merits of the case, but it does really finally open the door for some of those lower federal courts to use this as grounds for denying federal guard deployment in Portland, Oregon, and Los Angeles as well. So I was very pleased to read that last night, and I just wanted to weigh in. I know it's national news, and it's not local, but it is good news.
No, it is important, and although it's preliminary, lawyers are well aware that some of the things a judge has to look at. One is the balance of the harms. If we're arguing about a tree that's on the border between our property, and you want to cut it down and I don't, the balance of the harm is on my side because if you cut it down, I'm lost. If you don't cut it down. Yep. And they turn out to decide that you should be able to, then you still can, just a little bit late.
Yeah.
And one of the other things that's considered is probability of success on the merits. So when a judge issues an injunction like this, one of the things he or she is usually saying is not only will this stop irreparable harm from occurring, and the balance of the equities suggests we should do this in public policy. When I look at it preliminarily, I'm not committing myself to a decision this way, but it looks like side A, not side B, will win. So, But it's also a lower judge who can be overruled by others eventually.
Sure. But I did think it was important that that three-page opinion said the government failed to identify a source of authority.
Yes.
To allow the military to execute the laws in Illinois. And that's after the government lied extensively about what was going on in Chicago in order to, and what the history of that 1878 law was and what these words mean.
Right.
And finally, we're getting some rationality.
Sense.
All right. Not among three of them, of course. You still have our old guy Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas. But the other six, at least, are paying attention to the law.
On this one.
Yeah,
for
the other
now.
Thing to say about that before we close this and play the Clayton Flowers clip, the other thing to say about it is, okay, we sit here and we say, well, you know, who cares whether the National Guard goes to Chicago? Maybe they'll stop some criminals.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just wander around looking well-armed. But it's more than that. If the decision is that a president can send National Guard into any town, any time, because he says he wants to, or she wants to, that's precedent. And that allows that president or another president who may be politically diametrically opposed to not only do it where there's crime, but do it where there's dissension, where there are people who don't like that president and may be having a vigil, a peaceful demonstration in the streets.
In answer to your question, who cares about the Posse Comitatus Act, that answer used to be conservatives. Conservatives used to care about that a lot.
Yes, good point.
Yes, it does shock me that they've been, this court has been, the conservative court has been pretty cavalier about very conservative historic values, like state power.
Yep.
State and local authority.
Good to talk to you, and thanks for calling us.
Thank you very much. KTAL is a great radio station. Thanks
Nancy.
For doing this.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, now let's go to Clayton. Do we need to? Yeah, go
this
set it up.
Las Cruces Community Radio saying a special happy birthday to a special guy in our town, our friend Clayton Flowers. This is special. James Clayton Flowers was born in Virginia in December 1915, before the U.S. joined World War I. In the Second War, he was a pilot, a Tuskegee Airman, a black man flying missions and training other pilots before the U.S. Army was even integrated. He won the Congressional Medal of Honor. He then taught school for many years in New York City, then relocated to wonderful Las Cruces in the 1980s with his wife, Evelyn, who died in 2008. So we honor Clayton, whose birthday is December 25th, but truly, he honors us by living here among us.
Well, I was born in Gendron, Virginia, but I lived there less than a year and spent the first 8 years, really, on Salisbury Road. My mother was a teacher, so she taught in a church in the daytime. It was a one-room school. Doing all the grades in one room. One sister, three brothers, but one died when I was 5 years old. So I went to Brooklyn and picked up a bachelor's degree there. As long as I was studying, I was happy then. In 1932, Depression came along, and they said they had work in New Orleans, so I went down to New Orleans. And it was in New Orleans when they did that first thousand of the draft. And so I wasn't working at that time. I'd lost my job. And the rest of the sequence is my being in the service.
Okay.
I think that was the first thousand of the draft.
Right.
And I was quite bitter about being in the first thousand of the draft.
Yeah.
I know I went into the service in 41.
Yes, sir.
So I applied for OCS. And so in OCS, is, you know, the last 2 weeks they give you a specialty.
Mm-hmm.
So they made mine S2.
Okay.
And so that's how I happened to get into S2.
Yes, sir.
So when I came back from OCS, they sent me to recognition school for 2 weeks. And so I taught recognition to the aviation cadets.
Mm-hmm.
So then, next thing I know, they were sending me to intelligence school, combat intelligence,
mm-hmm.
and then photo intelligence. And each time I come back, and I do the job that they wanted me to do, and I ended up being an S2 officer for a squadron. And so they gave me a photo intelligence lab, and so I take pictures using the stereoscope, that day, an airplane taking pictures this way and this way, and with the stereoscope, would raise it. And so I take pictures of it. And they used it in escape. Well, the airplane, they would take a picture in the airplane. They fly over an area, and they take a picture. Then they fly over the area on the other side, take a picture. Well, they send those pictures down to my lab. And I used the stereoscope to raise it so I see what it was and take a picture of that. And so if I'd stayed in, they would have made me captain if I'd stayed in. Mom and Papa taught us that the war wasn't necessary, that every time they had a war, they didn't have to have had that war. Franklin Roosevelt was a sort of popular item for some of us. And so I kept up with what he was doing. In my mind, saying I was so anti-war, I thought if I got up to New York, that if I went into the service, I would be assigned in the North. And I was trying to avoid being assigned in the South.
You've been listening to our birthday tribute to Clayton Flowers on his 110th birthday, Thursday the 25th.
That was terrific. Thanks for doing that for us, Peter. Wonderful tribute.
Thanks for playing it, and thank you, Mr. Flowers. I've talked to him for several years. Sat with him at a NAACP banquet years and years ago, but haven't talked with him for a while.